the Hispanic Real Estate Brokers Association. And in studio today, my co-host is...
Sal Villalobos.
Thank you, Sal, for being here. And our guest is with us today via Zoom. And his name is Wesley Miller. Welcome to the show, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. I'm so glad that you could join us. Now, you're physically sitting where?
I'm in Sacramento, California, actually.
Oh, dear. Okay. Okay, so you're not at College Station.
Normally, I am. My wife just took a job up here, so I've been helping her move. And Yeah, so okay. Just got a little outdoor setup here going.
Okay, awesome. Well, the reason we have to, Wesley Miller here is because, Wes, I came across an article that you wrote in La Tierra magazine from the Real Estate Center called Residential Rental Protection and COVID-19. Now, during this pandemic that we're in, today is August 4th, and we're still in the middle of this pandemic. And so it intrigued me because, you know, this show is about home ownership, and we talk about ways to prepare, and then the pandemic hits, and we can't help but talk about rental and residential rental protection. So I would thank you so much for agreeing to be with us. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a research associate at the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M, and am also a PhD economics student at Texas A&M. So got my Aggie shirt on, as you can see. Hopefully don't ruffle too many feathers up there. And but I'm sure there's some Aggies up there too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so my work at both in the economics department and at the Real Estate Center kind of go hand in hand together. But right now I'm primarily focusing on this issue of evictions, and obviously that's come to the forefront of the national discussion, and how should we respond to this issue that's going on with the pandemic right now.
Exactly. It's a very serious issue, and as we speak, there's still deliberation, right, Sal, with Congress, and I mean the whole thing as to whether we should extend it.
Second before year.
Exactly. So before we get there, tell me about your article. Has some really, really great points. You're saying that this pandemic is going to have reverberating effects on individuals and society. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so there's a couple different avenues you can look at that. So one is just thinking about the consequences of those that end up being evicted. So this is a growing body of work and research across multiple disciplines. We still don't have a great understanding, but one thing we do know is that when someone has an eviction on their record, it's difficult for them to rent in the future, because that's often a screening question that's used for property management companies and multifamily housing. Have you had a prior eviction? And so sometimes those applicants will be thrown, you know, into the trash, their applications will. And so that is an automatic barrier, direct barrier to issue for evictees. Now, on the other hand, an interesting stat I actually learned from writing this paper is that 3 out of 4 landlords are actually small businesses, mom and pop places that are just renting out, you know, a house or two on the side for some passive income. So obviously, it's not really that big corporation that you're thinking about that, you know, may be able to shoulder some of the burden in terms of if rents aren't paid on time. A lot of these are individuals and homeowners themselves that have mortgage payments and bills to pay that don't have a big cushion that they can fall onto. So that said, any relief that is provided wherever on the spectrum can reverberate throughout the financial system in terms of, you know, from the landlords to the, you know, to those that are providing the mortgages and all the way through the system.
So you're saying like the servicers, it trickles down, the servicers, the owners, the renters.
So, and then even it can have long-term structural effects, and, you know, the decisions or the type of relief that our policymakers decide to implement during this crisis is going to play in people's minds, you know, and for future multifamily housing development. They want to see you know, what's the political landscape going to be like if we are faced with something similar? It doesn't have to be another pandemic, but just kind of gauging the appetite of what society and politicians are feeling about multifamily housing and renter protection and all these different policies. Right now it's just, there's a lot of moving parts and people are just soaking it in to see what's going to happen and what's the response going to be.
Well, a lot of renters are voters, so our politicians better be listening.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely makes up a large proportion of their constituency. And I think, I go into this into the paper, and another thing that's interesting is, you know, one of the initial responses nationwide was providing a forbearance or a moratorium on foreclosures and evictions for households, and the mechanism that enabled that was federally backed mortgages through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Well, there's no such system that exists really for the multifamily housing sector, so. You know, it's easy to look at this and say, you know, the federal government came through and provided assistance for homeowners, but what about the renters? But the thing is, there wasn't a mechanism that they could easily do that. And that's why you've seen different cities and different states and all these different jurisdictions, have to come up with ideas on their own. And that's what we're seeing right now.
So, question regarding the mortgage-backed securities. And so FHA does finance multifamilies in upwards of 5, 20, 30, 100 units. So, because, correct me if I'm wrong, there is some kind of protection for the renters there because these loans may be financed through a government program?
Yeah, so that's completely correct. And that's a significant portion of renters. I think the latest estimates I saw were about 30%. So 30% of renters will have similar type protection that homeowners were seeing through that, through the CARES Act, I think that was through. But then you still have 70%, I mean, upwards of 30 million renters that don't have protection through that because their multifamily housing unit isn't backed by a federally backed mortgage,
right,
financed federally backed mortgage.
I heard there's 6 million residents in Texas, and two out of five are renting. Is that an accurate number? Or?
I don't have those numbers in front of me, but you said 2 out of 5 households are renters?
Yes. That's something that I read a while back, so it just came back to mind right now.
Yeah, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, but that's unsurprising. I mean, a substantial portion of the population is composed of renter households. And then in the article, we go in and talk about just some brief differences between those two populations as well, renter and homeowning.
Okay, so I think the takeaway from this conversation that we're having so far is that communication is really, really important. Communication between the landlord, the tenant, so they both on the same page, right? Because neither one of them wants to lose in this situation, and so that's really important. So tell me, Wes, how did Texas respond locally?
Well, first, Texas implemented a statewide moratorium on evictions, and that was in late March, I believe, and that was. All of these policies have been adjusted and extended. So I believe the initial policy was for 30 days and then extended to 60 days. So that was a statewide response. I believe that when that expired, the individual cities and counties have differentiated in their response. The last I saw, Travis County extended their moratorium through September. But it's not just differences in dates of when the moratoria take place, but also intricacies and details. For example, in Travis County, I believe it's a moratorium on even notices of eviction notices. So that's the first part that starts the eviction process. And in some places, you are still able to file for an eviction, but none of the cases would be heard in court. So that's why we're saying there's a patchwork, you know, of policies across the state. Because everybody's just trying to figure out and respond as best they can. And again, they're balancing this issue of protecting renters, these renter households that may not be able to pay rent because of this pandemic, and also on the other end, landlords that have their own bills to pay that are dependent on that income.
Very good. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Wes, let's talk about a little more about really what the devastation that this can cause if it's not fixed and fixed soon. One of them, homelessness. And so let's take a quick break. When we come back from break, let's continue our conversation. If you'd like to be part of the conversation or have a question, please call us. Area code 214-431-5032. We'd love to hear your questions for Mr. Wesley Miller. We'll be back in just a moment. So can you hear me, Wes?
Yes.
Okay. All right, very good. That's really great information. And so we're going to go on further. You touched on a lot of the points that I had on my notes, which is we went through it pretty, really good. So we're going to go back and talk about the disparities and disadvantaged communities. I mean, let's get down in the nitty-gritty where it's really, really going to affect a lot of people, because eventually, I mean, the government, you know, we're pouring money into this, but is it fixing the problem?
Because Hey, this is Leticia.
And this is Matt. Catch us on The Reba Show every Tuesday from 2 to 3.
On our show, you'll be able to hear from the experts everything about home ownership. Tune in on Tuesdays at 2 on the Blue Stream.
On FishbowlRadioNetwork.com. Jump in.
Hello, you're listening to The Reba Show, Home Ownership. Hear it from the experts, live from Fishbowl Radio Network at Globe Life Park, Arlington, Texas, the American Dream City. My name's Leticia Gallegos, and co-hosting with me today
is Sal Villalobos.
Thank you all for joining us. Our special guest today via Zoom is Wesley Miller with the Real Estate Center at A&M University. And if you missed our first segment, you missed a lot of great information. Go back and listen to it on our podcast or listen to it on our Facebook Live on the Reba Show Facebook page. So, continuing with our conversation, first listeners, if you have a question, please call us. The number is 214-431-5032. So, Wesley, all this started, I mean, we know that the effects on renters has been more of an effect than on homeowners. You know, on this show, we talk about home ownership and we help people prepare for home ownership. But the reality is that there, you know, about 30% or so of renters have been affected from this, or there's, maybe that's a different number, but anyway, 30% or so. Let's go back to the initial, when it initially started to happen. So the initial impact of the shutdown, tell us more about that.
Yes, that's really important in understanding why policymakers rushed to support renters, because when the government shut down, obviously there was a host of layoffs, and analyzing it for Texas, the initial unemployment claims, these layoffs were highly concentrated in industries that contain a lot of renter households. So, for example, everybody has, off the top of their head, restaurants have really been hurting. Well, the accommodation and food services industry laid off 170,000, or there was 170,000 initial unemployment insurance claims just in the first 2 or 3 weeks in April, at the end of March and early April. And that industry, accommodation and food services, about 2/3 of those employees are renter households. So, and that's the highest concentration of all the industries. There's a list of 20 that are categorized. Other ones on there are retail, trade, and health and social assistance, arts, entertainment, and recreation. So all these service industries that, you know, we've got on the top of our head that we unfortunately can't go out and enjoy as consumers, those are the industries that were hit the hardest initially and actually are still being hit the hardest. Looking at initial unemployment claims through July, these industries are still being hit the hardest in terms of layoffs, and they have the highest proportion of renter households. So that kind of explains some of the initial rush to support these industries or these households, renters specifically, because policymakers identified that, you know, this is where the initial impact was going to hit.
Okay, not to mention housing, city housing, what am I looking at? The housing authority, right? Those that live in with the vouchers and are also affected, because not 100% of their rent is paid by the housing authority. And so the portion that's due by them, you know, cannot be paid because of these circumstances. So there's also that effect. So the housing authorities of cities around the Dallas-Fort Worth area are asking landlords, of course, to help out, to communicate with their tenants to avoid eviction. So that's real important.
So is there a difference between federal mandates and local jurisdictions where they have their mandates? Do those supersede the federal guides? For example, to your point, if you are on a voucher program or grant program, if your landlord is through a federally subsidized housing financing. If the rental home or the apartment building is financed by a federal agency or federally mortgage-backed security, do those supersede the jurisdiction guides, the local jurisdiction guides?
So I'm not sure on that. I would have to speak. We have a lawyer on staff that would be able to answer that question better. But I do know with the housing authorities, local housing authorities, those are covered through HUD and the CARES Act in terms of their protections. So they definitely were hit hard in terms of the employment composition, where those residents work are more often than not work in those industries. But they had the extended moratoria through the CARES Act. But yeah, in terms of the legal question of, you know, federal versus local and what rules matter here, I think right now, even speaking to lawyers, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's anticipating a lot of litigation to in response to these policies and you know, individual mayors and cities in their responses. Sometimes courts are, justice of peace courts in Texas where eviction cases are heard. Sometimes judges are making these decisions. So there's a lot going on right now. It's unprecedented and complicated and uncertain at the moment in terms of what we're doing and what we can be doing or, you know, legally can be doing and what the implications of that are.
So if you're in a certain area, don't take somebody's word that something's happening, your neighbor across town or a different state. Find out for yourself because it may not be the same. That's pretty much what I'm getting.
I think that's great advice. That's difficult to do because people aren't used to doing that and having resources and knowing where the resources are. But I think as a first step, looking contacting either your representative, local representative, whether it's a city council member or, just someone that is in more of a position of power that is making decisions that are affecting you.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about unemployment. In your paper, you mentioned that more than 400,000 Texans filed for unemployment insurance. That was in March. So I'm sure that number has increased. What can you tell us about that as far as how it pertains to this subject?
Yeah. So, well, it has increased. I think through the third week of July, the initial unemployment claims exceeded 3 million in Texas. So we've, but the good news is the pace has slowed down a little bit. So fewer Texans are filing for initial unemployment claims or for unemployment claims right now. But we also track continuing unemployment claims. So, not just the initial, but how many are staying on there? How are people able to rebound and get a job after going on unemployment? And right now, that number, the continuing claims, continues to climb. So while you're seeing a slowdown in initial claims, that might be partially because there's, not a lot of people left whose jobs are vulnerable that haven't already been laid off. So while it's a bright spot slightly there, overall we're still dealing with a lot of difficulties in the labor market. And as I mentioned before, these are highly concentrated in you could characterize them as renter household industries. Obviously, it's a composition of both renters and homeowners, but industries that have a high concentration of renter households. And that's continuing on as we speak.
And that's because, and also the additional $600 that they were receiving on top of their unemployment benefits also expired.
Yeah, so, and right now, policymakers at the national level, at the federal level, are discussing possible extensions there. But at the moment, August rent was already due, and that benefit wasn't there, that support wasn't there. So that's another challenge. Even outside of just the dollars and cents coming in, just the uncertainty of knowing, if you're going to be able to, how you can adjust your budget. One thing that I want to emphasize, another issue with evictions, You know, we mentioned earlier difficulties through the screening process for future rental applications. Mm-hmm. Another consequence of an eviction is it's detrimental to your credit score and to credit access. Well, right now, one thing that can save people, this may have long-term consequences, but if someone is faced with, you know, charging something on a credit card or paying their rent, you know, they may shift their budget so that they can have more cash to pay rent. But if you have a lack of credit access and you don't have that option to you know, to charge other expenses, other necessities like food, and then that creates even more difficulties and really challenges households. So this uncertainty, this budgetary uncertainty, with not knowing are you going to have another $600 from the federal relief, or is it going to be $200? That has implications, not just, you know, directly, but also how you're going to budget and for the next month.
Now, I know some of the CARES Act programs, or part of it has expired on July 24th, I believe, and some other on the 25th. So until the 24th, your landlord was not able to give you a, what is it called?
That was the moratorium you're talking about?
Well, yes, the moratorium. Mm-hmm. So they weren't able to send you a 30-day notice to vacate notice to vacate. What happens now? Now that did they somewhat are they extending that portion until they can actually decide, or so, is it a hard stop?
What you're referring to, I think, is the 3-day notice to vacate. So that's how the eviction process begins. Right. Is the landlord, before anything happens in court, before an eviction is filed, the landlord has to provide a 3-day notice to vacate to give the tenant an opportunity to move without any, you know, without involving the courts. So I believe in terms of the CARES Act, that's where the moratorium was set. So starting on that day, the 24th or 25th, those vacate notices were able to go out, and then but there have been extensions. So FHFA extended this through August. So that's so that applies to mostly single family housing for GSE backed single family mortgages. HUD provided similar protection for FHA insured mortgages. So you're seeing kind of the components of the CARE Act that were covered on the CARE Act. They are providing some extended protection through August. That may apply also to those multifamily properties that have federally backed mortgages.
So would a VA loan and a USDA loan also have the same type of protection, since they are also government backed loans?
I believe so, that they would be covered under those extensions through August. And again, so there's been a lot of confusion because there's so many moving parts in terms of where's the moratorium set. So the latest looked like at the federal level through the CARE, where this federal protection was preventing an eviction, a notice to vacate. But again, in other jurisdictions, for properties that aren't federally backed, financed or federally backed mortgage, it may have been set at, you know, you can file your eviction petition, the court's just not going to hear it until, you know, moratorium's over. But those are slight intricacies that could matter a lot in this process.
Thank you.
So actually, there may be a backlog in the courts, and we're, you know, we may not even know about it. And so that's that is so crucial that we know that something's going to happen, and it's going to happen big if our if our government doesn't make a decision on extending it or having some more relief. So we're going to take another break, and we're talking to Wesley Miller, and he will give us more information when we come back from the break. If you'd like to join the conversation or ask a question, our number is 214-431-5032, and we'll catch you on the other side of the break. Right, Wes. So, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go
Programming for The Reba Show is proudly underwritten in part by the Arlington Tomorrow Foundation, contributing to a thriving Arlington, and in part by the Texas Association of Realtors Housing Opportunity Foundation. Funding is also provided by generous donations from listeners like you.
You're listening to The Reba Show, Homeownership, Hear It From the Experts, live from Fishbowl Radio Network at Globe Life Park, Arlington, Texas. Thank you for listening. My name is Leticia Gallegos, co-hosting today with me.
Salvia Lobos.
Thank you. And our special guest is Wesley Miller today with the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M. Wesley, you've shared some really great information for our listeners. Our topic today is residential rental protection and COVID-19. We are smack in the middle of this pandemic. It's sad, and I know you all are just frustrated. You don't want to wear your masks. You want to get out, but it's real. It is really real, and I pray that you have not had anything happen to you and your family. Stay safe, but we want to bring you this information today because rental properties, if you're renting, you need some resources. And if you haven't reached out to your city for rental assistance, do so, because they've received a lot of money to be able to help. And I'm sure you have to be patient when it comes to seeking this kind of assistance, because I'm sure that they are just bombarded with a lot of people that are hurting, that have been unemployed, have been laid off, just be patient, and we'll get through this. So Wes, you've tell us about what you've heard as far, for example, in Houston. What has the little aftermath been on this?
Yeah, so we've been able to obtain eviction data from Houston, from Harris County specifically. And we've seen a collapse in eviction filings, which is exactly what you would expect. I think they're down almost 80% relative to last year in the number of eviction filings. So, you know, what that could mean is what you alluded to before is these could just be prolonged, and we could have a flood of eviction filings and flooding the court system, constables, with this process, as soon as the relief dries up. So that's something that policymakers definitely need to keep in mind. And you know, the difference between just a temporary Band-Aid and you know, actually trying to mitigate some of the negative effects from this situation.
Yes, because I've read also that there were issues with late rents even before COVID. Tell us about
that. In Harris County, actually, they did observe an increase in eviction filings in January and February before any of this occurred. So then the filings collapsed, and they've stayed down through the first week, you know, first couple of days of August as well. But yeah, so it's difficult to tease out in those beginning months what was happening, but they were observing an increase in evictions to start the year before this.
Yes, and then the moratorium came, and so they weren't able to file, and so that's what the worry is. How this is going to affect the, you know, there's disparities and disadvantaged communities, and you talked about that earlier when you talked about the shutdown, Wes, how it affected.
Yeah, so just looking on average of the you know, the different demographic. Different demographics of homeowners and renter households. Renter households are more likely to be minority households. I've already emphasized the industries that renter households typically are more likely to work in, and those have been hit especially hard from the pandemic. But also in terms of income levels, as you would expect, income levels are sometimes twice as more for homeowners than renters. I don't have data specifically on Austin, but in San Antonio, in 2017, the The average income was $68,000 for homeowners and $38,000 for renters. So a substantial difference there. Contributing to the income differences, there's also educational attainment differences. So all these factors go into play in terms of not just the immediate impact, but renter households may struggle. They may be at a different part of their life, their younger households, and they may struggle to react and be as flexible when faced with economic hardship. We talked about access to credit potentially being an issue. So all these things play a role. And again, we're speaking about averages here, but the average renter is going to struggle to be flexible and be able to shoulder some of these challenges than the homeowners.
So they're making less than half in some cases, but the expenses remain the same or higher for them, possibly because they may not have the same services or stores in their areas.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's kind of a case-by-case basis on that in terms of individual expenses. But we just know that, renter households, given the lower level of educational attainment or the stage of life that they're in, they may be less dynamic and be able to be flexible when faced with economic challenges.
Exactly. So there's a lot of uncertainty, definitely a lot of uncertainty in this time. And it affects everyone. It really affects everyone. So communities, it affects families, children. This is going to have a long-term effect. Don't you agree, Wes, that this is what we're in right now, but the effects will be long-term?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to tell. This is unlike anything that we've seen before, obviously, but anybody that's been alive. And another thing I want to emphasize is, if we enter a deep recession, a lot of times it's thought that one way to handle this for new households or younger individuals is, that recession usually boosts college and educational attainment. But right now, given the situation, the nature of the pandemic, where we've got a whole schooling issue on how are we going to handle education and schooling, that part of the equation is completely unknown and uncertain right now. People might not be incentivized to get additional schooling or pay more for online schooling. These are challenges that universities and schools from kindergarten through higher ed are dealing with, and that add challenges. Again, if your option was unemployed or go to school, that equation gets, or that decision is muddied by this uncertainty of school safety and if schools are even going to be open.
That's a really great point. Very, very good point. So I want you to know, listeners, that we have key resource links on our website. If you'll go to our website, HREBAConnect.org, that's REBAConnect.org, right on the homepage, we have links that we've put on there to assist you. Links like unemployment, if you just got laid off and need to file for that. Emergency assistance resources, child care information, immediate jobs. I mean, there's when I saw that immediate jobs available due to COVID-19, I was surprised that there actually are jobs available during COVID-19. And other benefits, SNAP, WIC, those assistance programs, there's links on our website that you can look at to find the assistance that you need to get through this terrible time that we're in. So
I'm going to ask Wes a question regarding the, you kept referring to Texas Tenants Union. Is there an organization that helps tenants with certain resources or information, direction of who may assist them? Or is it just informational data program or agency?
I'm not certain on that. I believe that I've read that the Texas Tenants Union will provide is one resource that tenants can use, if they have questions given the circumstances of, you know, steps to take and what to do. But I haven't contacted them personally.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so here at the Reba Show, listeners, we inform and we serve. We bring you information about home ownership, whether you're preparing for it or sustaining it. And during this time, you know, we also want to bring you information that's crucial for this time that we're in. Our hope is that you will engage with us here on the Reba Show and become a loyal fan of the Reba Show. So please make a note to listen every Tuesday at 2 here at fbrn.us. for the podcast, or Facebook Live on our Reba Show Facebook. Our guest has been Wesley Miller. Wesley, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We really, really appreciate you.
Of course, anytime. I really enjoyed it.
Great. So the Hispanic Real Estate Brokers Association is a registered 501c3 nonprofit corporation. We've been streaming live on Facebook. You can see a replay of the video on the Reba Show Facebook page and also on our YouTube channel, where you can subscribe to see future videos. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And like I said before, this episode is also available on a podcast on the Reba Show page at fbrn.us, and also on our webpage, rebaconnect.org. So if you like what you hear, you make a donation. We don't say no to donations to continue funding this programming and other community outreach efforts that we have. So if you have any specific questions, don't hesitate to email us, rebashow@rebaconnect.org. Again, Wesley, thank you for being here. My name is Leticia Gallegos. Thank you for listening. Have a great afternoon, everyone.
See you next week.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to